Okay, we continue in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Tes Vav. We're in the middle of Pasuk Tes, the Malbim's commentary. And Malbim was elaborating on another point of Shaul's sin. We were discussing the words Vayachmol Shaul. And Shaul had Chemla. Vayachmol Shaul. And we defined what is the difference in the three terms, chamal, chus, and rachem. There's three words. They all seem to mean mercy. But yesterday the Malbim explained they don't all mean mercy. Rachamim, mercy, but it's not just, that only happens from person to person. Because you feel bad, you see another person in a destitute state, you don't want to see him in that state, so that's mercy. You just feel bad about it. It's a human reaction to seeing another human being suffering. Okay. Now, chemla and chusa, they're not exclusively on people. And we explain that chusa chas, it's like we said, a person is chas al mamona. A person is, it's a shame to waste the money because they're his money. So it's like you have mercy on your money. Have mercy on my money. Why should I lose my money? So therefore, you know, if it'd be a fire, a person will run in and try to save as much money as possible. It's like, what a shame to lose the money. All right, that's chus. Chemla is something, but at least the money, there's something you get out of the money. It's beneficial for you. So it's a mercy you have, not on a person that evokes the mercy. But it's on the money that evokes money, like what a shame to waste the money. But chemla is something that doesn't really, you don't even benefit from it at all, but your mind decides that it's not worthy to destroy such a thing, and it's a good thing that this thing should stick around. So now, that has nothing, there really is no tangible benefit for you. When you have mercy on another person, you feel bad that he's so destitute. When you give him, you feel better. The money, what a waste. Why should we waste? You feel bad of the waste that's going on. But chemla is where there is a compassion, not because it was instinctual that you see the person suffering. It's not that it's what a waste, but you say, you know what? My mind decides that this is something that shouldn't be destroyed. And that comes by you ascribing a value to the item, that although it's not a value to you, it is of some value, as we said, the national, what do we call it? The National Archive. What did we say? Give an example. A heritage, historical place. What's this old building that was built in 1812 worth to anybody? No, can't touch it, got to maintain it. Why? It's value. What's the value? You're not even living in the house. It's our tradition. That's valuable to know what our heritage was. That's valuable. So that's what chemla, it's not just, it would be a shame to knock it down. What are you talking about? It's an important thing. It has a value. And we want to uphold that value and tradition. So what did Hashem say? Hashem didn't warn him and say, don't be chas, or don't have mercy on Amalek. Because he says, it's possible that, you know, you can listen to Hashem and still feel bad. And there could evoke feelings of rachamim that he'll feel bad that he's killing little children. You can't, and that's a natural feeling. You can't say, you can't have that feeling. And yachos, and to chas, and to worry about destroying all the property, that's also, he's gonna feel bad. He will feel bad. You can't deny his feelings. What a shame. What a shame. Look at those beautiful prize cattle we're just destroying. What a waste. He could think that way, but chemla, so the first are more instinctual. Chemla is ready. You have to start putting your mind into it and saying, this thing I think is a valuable thing. And so it's not worthy to destroy it. And that's what the prophet was commanding him on. Saying, don't you dare think that there's anything valuable to ascribe to Amalek. That it should be something left of Amalek. He says, and that was the big sin he did, because he wanted to be smarter than Hashem, and therefore Hashem says, don't have compassion on them. Don't have chemla. Don't think a thought that they'd be worthy to be kept alive and not to destroy him. And not because you have feelings of compassion, not because you feel, what a shame. He's saying, I really think that Amalek has a certain value of being a human being. And this is where Shaul's big mistake came, where he had this chemla on Agag and on the choicest of the sheep. And that's where he showed that his emunah wasn't strong. Because if his emunah was strong, he wouldn't for a minute think that he should have some chemla on these enemies of Hashem. And therefore his mind made the sin. And obviously then it came into action where he chose not to destroy him. Right? And that's the real core of the fall over there. And that's the Vayachmol. That Brahm, he thought that there was indeed a value over here. Now, the Rav Tzadok, as we've already said, in another place, in Resise Loila, Oslam et Ches, in the middle over there, he mentions that Shaul certainly remembered what Hashem said. He says, Bem Zohar Hashem. He says, Rak Shechama. But he had this chemla. He says, Kesavar Isa Mitzvah. He thought he was doing a mitzvah. And that's one of the ways the Eitzar gets in. It fools you to think it's a mitzvah. Right? As we said in the other long piece of Reb Tzadok. So then he explains, so how did he make this mistake? So aside from everything else Reb Tzadok said, he added a new point. Gemara in Gittin says the following. Gemara in Gittin says, Ein Adam Omed Al Divrei Torah. Person doesn't really come to the true understanding of Torah. Elim came nichshol, until you first stumble. Try to understand a Gemara. You don't really understand it until you first come up with the wrong interpretation. Come with the wrong interpretation, and you see why it's wrong, you discard it, then you come to the correct. In other words, when you learn, don't expect to get it the first time. It's an important rule of any growth. Don't say, I'm going to learn how to ride a bicycle. Well, you're going to fall 50 times before you're going to learn to ride that bike. It's not possible to grow in any area unless you're willing to fall in attempting to understand that area. And you will fall, particularly in Torah. That's why you have to have a Rebbe. But you try to understand it. You make mistakes. And then later you get it. Right? So he's saying that's the idea of Amalek. Amalek is this michshol. Amalek is this stumbling block that, Amalek makes you think, brings you to sin without you really intending it. And it makes you think it's a mitzvah and this and that. And then later you go, oh yeah, he fooled me. Taka, it wasn't a mitzvah. Right? And that's why he says Amalek came before Matan Torah, before we got the Torah, because, they're bringing a downfall before the rise. Right? So that's the idea of Amalek. Amalek is this idea of bringing a downfall. In other words, once you've made the mistake, now I understand where I'm wrong. So now I can correct that. And so Shaul, was thinking that, this is what Amalek does. So in other words, saying, these are people, they're like our watchdog. They try to trick us, they try this. There's a certain value of learning how to resist them, learning how to, they ascribe values in the wrong direction, and that we could stumble on that, and then we'll understand afterwards that it's wrong, and we'll learn from that. And he says, that's also of a benefit, and that was a kavanah l'shem shamayim. Just like every bad characteristic, it comes from something that's good, and therefore we take gerim converts from the non-Jews. So he figured, there's something good that comes out of Amalek as well. So that's a good point that comes out of Amalek. We see what the evils of the world are, and they might be our test, and we may stumble from time to time, but we'll learn from it and we will grow. And there's something good from them. And to that, Hashem said, nothing doing, because you know what? There ain't nothing good in Amalek. Nothing at all. And therefore we don't accept any converts from Amalek. Cause there's not, and the only only descendants that came from Haman, from Bnei Brak, as we said before, only came through a rape of a Jewish woman. So really still a Jewish woman. and it was never something that was accepted amongst the Jews. That was a question. How do you have descendants of Amalek? Can we accept converts? He's saying, can't accept converts. So he says, and now he explains very nicely, who ultimately killed Shaul? Who ultimately killed Shaul? Shaul was mortally wounded on the battlefields against the Plishtim. And then when we'll get there, also you're going to realize there happened to be an Amaleki arms bearer or something. And he told the Amaleki to finish him off. Right? So it seems that there were more Amalekis around. This wasn't the be-all and end-all of all of Amalek. I mean, it's too difficult. You'll see in the whole stories of Sefer Shmuel that David was fighting Amalekis all the time. So I understand from only the one Agag. So otherwise, it must mean there were pockets of Amalekis, and this was the first pocket. And this, right, in the first pocket, he didn't destroy them all. Right? So be that as it may, so it came out that he didn't say it was a Ger Amaleki that went and killed Shaul. And at that moment, when David saw that, he understood that we're not supposed to accept converts from Amalek. In other words, he understood. It was like a Mita Keneged Mita. You wanted to allow people from Amalek to convert. You felt there might be some value in Amalek. Then the Amaleki went and killed him. So that was all the value that they had. And that's what he's saying, that there really is nothing good in Amalek at all that you can take out of it, and there's no reason to take them at all. So, and we'll see as in the future Pesukim will explain more about this. And the main message is you got to listen to what Hashem wants, even though you figure that something good will come out of it. But still, and even if eventually something really good will come out of it, doesn't matter. You can't make any cheshbonos. Okay, so let's move on now to Pasuk Yud. So that was what Shaul did. Vayehi dvar Hashem el Shmuel emor. And Hashem speaks to Shmuel, saying, Shmuel is not here at all. Remember, he wasn't here at the battle. So Hashem says, Nichamti kihimlachti eshol lemelech. So the simple translation of Nichamti means I regret. I regret that I coronated Shaul as a king. Kishav me'acharai, because he has turned away from me. Vestvarai lo hakim, and my words he has not upheld. Vayichar l'Shmuel, and Shmuel was very upset about this. Vayizak al Hashem kol halayla, he cried out to Hashem, he davened Hashem the entire night when he heard this very bad news. So the Malbim explains, what does Nichamti mean? He says, whenever you have an expression of Nichamti, it means that Hashem is like totally 100% change of course if I was going to deal with these people. Or whenever Hashem uses Nichem, it's like, not that he regrets, no such thing as Hashem being able to regret, because Hashem doesn't make a mistake. You know, usually, I regret doing that. But it means, it's just like when somebody regrets something, he does a 180-degree turnaround. So in other words, the way Hashem turns away in dealing with the person is as if there was a regret. As if, you know, I was for you, and now I'm totally not for you. It's like a total change of how he's going to deal with it. He explains, who bitul ha-pu'ula gamri, totally nullifying whatever activity he was doing before him. Because everything that's maintained depends on the will of Hashem. So when Hashem, so to speak, doesn't want that thing to exist, so it's like it's not there anymore. When Hashem says, you know, till you were, as long as you're okay, I wanted you around. But now that you're okay, I totally don't want you around. And that means, whenever you have the word yinachem, means it's a gzar din, the decree was set, and there's no hope for tshuva. That's what it means. So where did you have my yinachem before? By the Mabel. It says, Hashem regretted creating man. What does it mean, regretted creating man? He says, I made man, and now I don't want to give him any more energy. I don't want to give him any more life force. He's not deserving of it. Now it's I changing my course of how I am dealing with humanity. That's what v'yinachem means. So he changed his course. Until now, everything he did was to help Shaul. He was totally behind Shaul, 100% behind Shaul all the way. And now, he's totally not behind Shaul. And now it's like it's two different Shauls now. The Shaul up to this battle, and a shawl after this battle. He's a totally different shawl. It's like you have what do you call it? What's the term they use in sports when a team's doing really good and then it's doing bad and it's doing good? They say the something. It's the no. What does it mean? Like they're like more into. You could be not doing so good and then the tide has turned. But there's a real good expression for that. It's I can't remember. You watch a game, right? And one team is killing the other team, right? So all of a sudden, it's changing.
Momentum?
The momentum. That's the word. The momentum all of a sudden is shifting. How do you define that? How do you scientifically say the moment? Before the team was getting every ball was going in. All of a sudden, the balls aren't going in. What's going on? It's like all of a sudden, they could do no wrong. Now they could do no right. Sometimes you watch these games. The team's killing a team in the first half. All of a sudden, the second half's a totally different game. And they usually say there's usually a point in the game where the momentum shifted. Let's say the team is going, they're doing good. And then like one play, he passed it. Let's say they're ahead 10 to nothing, right? In football, right? And now they're at the 1 yard, they're going to get another touch, they're going to be ahead way ahead, right? And what happens, he throws it, the other guy intercepts it, takes the touch the other way. Instead of being 17 points up, they're only 3 points up. And that's the end of the half. And they say that was the play that shifted the momentum of the game. Like, what happened? They were doing good. They're killing the other team. But that one play, it was like a 14-point change. Instead of 7 more, they got 7 less. And so, that was the play that shifted the momentum of the game. So it's the same thing. It's like you have a momentum. The momentum, Hashem is giving you the momentum. All of a sudden, Hashem says, that's it. No more momentum from me. Then he's a totally different man. And this is the pasuk that really connotes that turning point of the game, as it were. Okay. Yud Beis. Now it's interesting. Shmuel prayed and prayed, and we see no response from Hashem. We don't overtly see any benefit of the prayer. Now, usually when you pray, something good comes out of it. Doesn't seem like much comes out of it now, at least. Could be later on when Shaul meets his final battle before the pleasing, where he will fall and die, and he makes the mistake and he brings up Shmuel from the dead through sorcery, through witchcraft. At the end, Shmuel said, listen, if you do tshuva, you'll still be in Olam Haba with me. So you never know. Maybe that prayer he was saying now that didn't seem to affect anything at all. We know prayer always helps, but maybe not right now. Maybe it'll help later. But it's interesting. The Torah says he called out to Hashem. He was upset. He was really upset that the one that he anointed was not going to continue. And he cries out to Hashem. He said, what should Hashem be listening to? It's not clear. We don't see a response to that prayer here, at least. Okay.
Rabbi,
yes?
It's an unusual word for when you hear the Shmuel. It's usually a word that's used.
He's angry.
Angry.
He was angry. He was angry at the situation.
Yeah. In English, they
translated
as grieved, but...
No, Charonaf, he was really angry. It could have been a number of things. But clearly it's after Hashem said, I've changed my mind with Shaul. He hasn't listened to me. Maybe he's angry that Shaul didn't listen to Hashem. He says, how could he have done such a thing? It's a terrible Chil Hashem. He got upset at the Chil Hashem that resulted from this. As we'll see from the words of rebuke he's going to give him shortly. But of course, so now, Yud Beis. Vayashkem Shmuel likras Shaul b'boker. So now Shmuel gets up early to go towards Shaul in the morning. Vayugad l'Shmuel le'mor. But it was told to Shmuel, Ba Shaul ha'Karmela. Shaul is coming to Mount, or came. He came to Mount Carmel. V'nei matziv lo yad. He set up a yad. We'll have to explain what that clause means. Vayisov, and he turned back. Vayavor, and he crossed. Vayered a Gilgal, and went down to Gilgal. Now, this is very fascinating. if you're not familiar at all with the geography, you wouldn't notice anything in this pasuk. Now, where was this battle fought with Amalek? It was in Arad. Where's Arad? South. The south. Beersheba area. That's south. That's really south, right? Where's Mount Carmel? Haifa. Where's that? North. That's pretty north. That's where Shmuel HaKarmeli. Shmuel was from Carmel. So it seems that this is unbelievable. Shaul treks from Arad, from the south, all the way to Carmel. Okay? And he set up something, which we'll explain in a minute what he set up. And then he turns back to Gilgal. Where's Gilgal? Gilgal is like right about in the middle. It's opposite Yericho. Right? That's like central east part of Israel. Haifa is northern west. Right? So this is quite a trek. Arad is down south. So from south all the way up the north, and then back down south to the to the eastern part of the central region, he goes back to Gilgal. So like, first of all, it's just unbelievable. Like that had to have taken some time. I can't believe that happened in one day. So what's going on over here? So what is this Meitziv Yad? Literally, it means he set up a hand. So let's first see what Rashi has to say on this. So Rashi says, "Bein lo mizbeach." He built a mizbeach. He built an altar. He went to Har Carmel. He built an altar. And Rashi adds, and this is the mizbeach that will be said by Elio Hanovi when it says, "Vayerapei es mizbeach Hashemrus." He fixed up the mizbeach that was destroyed. And if I'm not mistaken, this is the mizbeach he used to defeat the Nevi Habal, the famous showdown with the false prophets. He built an altar, they built an altar, he rebuilt the altar, was destroyed. Okay. So that's the first interpretation we have from him. Then he brings one from the Targum, but it seems that he set up a storage facility for all the cattle, all the loot that he had. He had to set it up for that. Now, and the Ralbag, you know, continues and says this is exactly, says similar to Rashi. So we see from the first part of Rashi, there is a strong connection between Shaul and Eliyahu Navi. What is the connection between Shaul and Eliyahu Navi? Well, we already saw in the Reb Tzadok, if you recall, that those Shaul was like a one-year-old who did not sin. Eliyahu left the earth alive. Hashem never killed him. He just went in the chariot of fire. Must have been someone who didn't sin very much either. Right? That's point number one. And Shaul was being a king before David, right? The mission that he was supposed to do was to eradicate the evil, and then David would be the one to do the good, as it were. So similarly, Eliyahu, he comes before the Mashiach, as it were. So there's similars there. And the only difference was, you know, while on the other hand, for example, David did do an Avera, but Shaul, until he became a king, didn't do an Avera. Eliyahu didn't do an Avera. Shaul comes from Binyamin, and there seems to be some connection of Eliyahu also to Binyamin, also didn't sin. So there's certain similarities, and Reb Tzadok adds another nice twist, is that Shaul and Eliyahu both did an Avera Lishma. They both did a sin for holy reasons, but the difference was Eliyahu was right and Shaul was wrong. I mean, Shaul was clearly not listening to Hashem. But somebody's going to say, well, you know, sometimes for the sake of God, you don't listen to God. Right? As Reb Tzadok said, he misread the test, or whatever mistakes he made. But he really thought he was doing it l'shem shemayim. But problem, little problem, he didn't listen to God. Right? Now, that was an avera l'shma, but it got punished because it was still a mistaken l'shma. But Eliyahu HaNavi, what did he do? He went and built an altar in a place you're not allowed to build an altar. He had it built in Yerushalayim. That's clearly an Avera. But that was to disprove the false prophets. That was an Avera Lishma, but that was proper. So now, what happens? We see from here that Eliyahu made a tikkun for Shaul's mistake. Shaul's like crowning climax to his Avera is he went and built a Mizbeach to declare how wonderful he was. Look, I'm building a mizbeach on Har Carmel. Maybe Har Carmel, he knew Shmuel lived there. guess I'm going to go to my Rebbe and I'm going to build a Mizbech right by my Rebbe. So, boy, you messed up on that one. You meant well, but you messed up. So generations later, Eliyahu would use that very altar that became destroyed and would use it in a positive way. Use it in a positive way. And as well, Shaul, who, what was his downfall? He didn't stick with his year Shemayim. He didn't use the power of justice 100% that he should have used over here with Amalek. He used mercy instead of justice. Eliyahu also represents justice. Remember, Eliyahu is Pinchas. He's violent. When somebody does things wrong, he kills them. Eliyahu always sticks up for God and is very uncompromising. Right? That's why Eliyahu comes to every Bris Milah. Right? Bris Milah is also a violent act. You're cutting off the foreskin of a little baby. You know, if you're not Jewish, you'd watch that. You'd think they're barbaric people. And of course, people call us barbaric. When the medical world thought maybe there was some medical benefit, okay, it was a procedure. Now they don't really think there's any medical benefits. Now they just call it barbaric. So the doctor says, okay, it's not barbaric. If Hashem says it's okay, it's good, it's barbaric. So it is. So what Elio is at every one of those, at all those things. But that's what we call courage l'shem shemayim. So he had lots of Yir Shemayim. Because remember, what did Eliyahu Navi do? You gotta remember, gotta appreciate. Who was the king in his time? Achav, the wicked Achav. He was like really a bad dude. And not only that, he had a wife, Jezebel, who was equally as bad. Powerful and rotten to the core. And everybody's following them. And they're successful. Gotta remember, they were also successful. Because even though they worshipped Avodah Zarah, they kept shalom between the Jews. That was a big thing. You know, Hashem loves shalom. Even though you do a lot of avers, Hashem's not going to punish you right away. He's going to give you a lot of slack. A lot of slack. They were somehow able to, like it was like mamish, like secular, you know, lovey-dovey Judaism over here. We're all friends. We're all this. Liberal Judaism. We're all friends. Meanwhile, we worship, do every aver of the book. So they were very, and she was ruthless. He was ruthless. If he wanted a vineyard, killed the guy. Finished. So now everyone's going in that direction. He says, doesn't care. He mamash lets him have it all the time. And Achav was, and there was a price on it. They wanted to kill him. He had to run into hiding. And he didn't care. He didn't give up. He kept, that's no compassion. So, and Shaul, some of the people had a little mercy. Well, some Amalekites have taken some of the sheep. Oh, I can't stand up against, what are you talking about? Right? So that's where he messed up. So clearly, there's a lot of connection over. So Shaul's mistake, you know, that he culminates the mistake by making him expect, look, it's an everlasting tribute. It was such a failure. So Leo takes the very Mizbech that fell and he fixed it up. And kind of said, you know, we at least you had good intentions, so we don't negate your good intentions totally, even though your Mizbech gets destroyed, but I'll rebuild your Mizbech. I will fix it up and make good out of that where you made bad. So that's a lot of the connections we see over here. Now, somebody else mentions, I can't remember where I saw it, or might be said somewhere else. What's that? Oh, did I look at the Malbim yet? Malbim says, This yad, mitzvah yad, it was a monument as a sign of the victory. And therefore, it was made in the shape of a hand. That's what it means. Heitziv yad, he set up a hand. A hand was a monument. Where do we have that? Where else do you have that? No? People who travel to Israel? Go to Yerushalayim? What? The wrong yad. Yad Avshalom. Avshalom was the son of David HaMelech. He made a monument for himself. And on top of the monument, there was a hand. Put a hand. A hand like shows power and strength and all that. So if you go to Yad Avshalom, you don't see the hand. You just see a tower and there's no hand. What happened? When Napoleon came to Eretz Yisrael, and they gave him a tour of Eretz Yisrael. And he sees this monument with a hand. So he says, what's this? They tell him the story. He says, Avshalom was a great warrior. He was the son of David. He rebelled against David. And eventually died in that revolution. Some poem says, what? A son rebelling against his father? Blow off the hand. They blew off the hand. It's the end of the story. It says, there's no hand anymore. So Shaul makes a monument with the hand, as it were, to show that this is the Jewish power. Let the Goyim be afraid. It's a monument. The Jews have strength and power. We destroyed Amalek. And that's what it is. So keep that in mind. We'll see that this little thing will come back to haunt us a little bit. So there's enough. So that's what it is. So really, Shaul mamish thought he did the Ratzon of Hashem. He even built a monument after all was said and done. And you'll see even more. Pasuk Gimel. Vayavo Shmuel Shaul. So now he went back to Gilgal, because Gilgal was also a very popular place. Why? Because Gilgal was Jews first mass circumcised themselves when they crossed the Jordan, if you recall. When they crossed the Jordan, they had not been circumcised in the 40 years in the desert. And he circumcised, Yeshua circumcised all the Jews, and he said, now we've removed the shame from the Jewish people. Very interesting, because remember, Amalek were the ones who insulted Hashem, and what was the ways of insult? They killed a whole bunch of people, and they had a literal, I don't know if it's literally or medrash that's giving you the symbolism. There's a pile of orlas, a pile of foreskins. They killed a whole bunch of, and threw it. Shem, you like foreskins so much here? They threw it up in the air. Like, totally not into Kiddush at all. But Gilgal was the place where we got the Kedusha. So it's almost as if he's saying, look, everything that Amalek represented against the holiness that we established in Gilgal, now I'm at Gilgal now. So he, and Gilgal was always a place that got together. It was a very holy place. So his mamish figures, this is like amazing. So Vayavo Shmuel Ashol, so Shmuel comes to Shol. Vayomel Ashol, and Shol says, Baruch Atol Hashem! Blessed are you to God, O prophet. Hakimosi Esver Hashem. I established the words of Hashem. I listened to Hashem. Now, one of the greatest puns of prophetic history. Vayomer, Tosik Yudal, Vayomer Shvul, Umeh Tzon HaKol HaZeh Be'oznoi. Now, what's this word meh? It should be ma. Umeh Kol HaTzon. Where's this meh?
Where's Paul?
Right? So he's already hinting him. You know, what is the voice of the sheep that I hear? Meh. In my ears. V'kol ha-bokar asher anochi shomeya, and the noise, the voice of the cattle, which I hear. So now, isn't this interesting? Now Shaul comes and says, I did the will of Hashem. So now, instead of saying, you didn't do the will of Hashem, he gives him a hint. Giving away maybe a chap your mistake. You have this all the time. Hashem did this with Adam Arishon. Right? Did it with Chava. Hashem says to Adam, where are you? It starts off with a benign comment, you know. You know, I'm talking to you like, I'm going to, what was that voice of the sheep? Maybe you'll catch on your own? Nothing doing. Pasuk Tesvav, Vayomer Shaul. Shaul says, oh, that's no problem. May Amaleki have him. We brought him from Amalekis. Now look who he blames for. Asher Chamal Ha'am. The people had Chemla. The people had mercy. Ameita Vatzon Rabokar, and the choicest of the sheep and the cattle. Why? Laman Zvoach L'Hashem Ogecha. In order to bring a korban to Hashem, your God. Vesayose Echaramu. And the rest, they destroyed. So now the Malbim over here says, and this is the third and final mistake. Remember we said three reasons why Hashem does not accept his tshuva, right? Number one, it was mistakes in being a king. Number two, ascribing value to something that shouldn't have had a value. And now he gets to number three. He says, Shaul offers excuses in two ways. Number one, he says, it's the people who had mercy. So he's saying it's like the people did it. It wasn't me, it was the people. A. Okay, even like Reb Tzadik, maybe he's saying like, was the people having the mercy, was a sign that I should do what I should do. But anyway. And then number two, in terms of the goal, there was, we weren't taking that to take spoils for ourselves, but to bring korbanos to Hashem. What do you want? It was not for ourselves, for Hashem. And the proof is, because everything that was left, we killed everything else. If we really wanted wealth, we would have kept everything. We killed 90%, whatever. We killed most of the stuff. But we want to take the choices to give it to Hashem, to show honor to Hashem. So what are you worried about? We're not getting anything out of this. So, But in his words, he revealed that, you know, what his really thoughts were, because he thought that they said, he says, Shechoshev Shadavar Zeh, he said, this thing to destroy everything, it's not Roy Vyosh, it's not proper to kill everything. And there he says, the people had compassion, right? Even though he had compassion, he relates it to the people. It's like there's excuse. And he says, and this is the third reason why his tshuva is not accepted, because one of the conditions of tshuva is charoto in vidu. You have to regret, you have to confess. And he didn't regret, and he didn't confess. He didn't even recognize he did his sin. And instead he excused his words. So, you know, when you're getting it, it's a right away, the mom says, when he said, what's this I hear about the sheep? So, I didn't do anything wrong. So now, if you look at the, well, you don't have it, the Musar Navim says something very nice over here. He says that they didn't, on the commentaries we just said, they didn't do it for their pleasure, but to bring Korbanos to Hashem. So first of all, he says, Shaul didn't understand that, Chazal say you can't bring a Korban unless something you're allowed to eat. Certain rule. You can only bring kosher animals for Korbanos. And the reason is, right, it can't be that something that a lesser person can't take part of, you don't give it to a king. You don't give a king something you yourself wouldn't use. And it was prohibited for the Jews to benefit from Amalek's stuff. Certainly you shouldn't give it to Hashem as a korban, A. But then he asks, again, the similar question we've all been dealing with, but he gives a new spin. He says, listen, what was the big deal already? Was this such an it's such a sin you couldn't fix up? He says, okay. So he brings a god alive. He's going to bring the sheep alive. So guess what? Just kill him. You did something wrong. Kill him now. Moshe said, okay, you're wrong. Kill him right now. Take the sheep. Kill them. I don't want a korban. Kill them right now. Finished. Just like a chapter before, when the Jews mistakenly were sacrificing animals in the wrong way after in the middle of their battle with the Pelishim. Shofan was wrong. He fixed the things. Okay, let's fix them. Let's do it right. So what's the big deal? Such a big sin that he couldn't have kapara. Okay, let's say, you know, you do something that's, it's something you can't fix up. You killed somebody. Okay, you can't fix up. You killed somebody. Here, what can't we fix up? Just go right now. Say, okay, you're wrong. Kill Agog now. Kill the sheep. Don't bring a korban. Kill the sheep now. So he explains a couple of things. Or he says, first of all, he says this idea of obliterating Amalek was a very difficult thing to do. First of all, Amalek was one of the nations that was close to the Jews. I think he means in terms of relationships and also geography, but a descendant of Esav. So first of all, it's hard to kill, you know, one of your mishpacha, even though it's not a nice mishpacha, but still mishpacha. Something harder to do. And therefore Hashem said at the time that you're doing this, you have to be very with din. And when you're doing this more so, you can't have any pleasure from this battle at all. Why? Because there's an opportunity of Kiddush Hashem here. Kiddush Hashem only happens when everyone understands you're not benefiting from this at all. And for example, when Avram defeated the four kings and was able to reconquer everything that was coming from Sodom, and Sodom says, listen, you know, really all the, and he took all the loot. It was all this stuff that Sodom had lost in battle. And by right, Avram got it, he should have kept it. So the king of Sodom says, you could have all the loot. And Avram says, I make an oath. I won't even take a shoestring. I won't take anything from you guys. Why not? Because people will think, we know Avram went to battle. He went to battle for the loot. No, he only went to battle, why? To save Lot, who was the only other moral person in the world. That's the only reason he went to battle. So Avram made a big Kiddush Hashem that nobody thought he did it for the money. Just to save Lot. And the same thing. No one should perceive that there was any hana that happened to the Jewish people from this war, except one thing. We're here to be the world's, policemen. These are wicked people. They must be destroyed. Finished. We will not benefit at all from this. And therefore the Torah says you can't have any benefit from an ir hanidachas. If there's a Jewish city in Israel that's worshiping idols, we have a responsibility to destroy the city, you can't have any benefit from it. All these are situations where we don't even say, no, the real reason they killed the whole city was because the king wanted some money. The real reason the Jews killed Amalek is they had a lot of sheep and they wanted more sheep. And if you recall, right, so that, you can't show you have any hana over here.
Wouldn't killing your enemy give you hana? Couldn't you see?
No, they're not getting it. They didn't even do anything to us per se. Our job is to kill these people. Finished. It's interesting, there are certain shitas who hold that even in the Milcham of Amalek, that you first offer them to stop being bad. You know, usually with the seven nations, you go and first you try to make peace. Say, listen, if you're willing to keep the seven Melchalas and be subservient to us, then you can be, ruled by us. And never say, we'll give you a chance. You want to be a decent human being, we won't kill you. Some Shita says the same thing with Amalek. They offered, but they turned it down. But the point is, these are terrible people. We have to destroy them. Finished. You don't get Hana. You know, the only way you could tell, I mean, that's already speculative. But when you're taking their loot, then it's clearly you have evidence, right? That's the difference over here. Just to get a pleasure of killing. Why do you get a pleasure of killing? Stam was there just to kill people? You gotta get something more out of that. Just don't just stam, because we're not talking about psychopaths now. They wouldn't, they say a lot of things about the Jews, they still don't call us psychopaths, right? Nobody gets just a pleasure to kill. You kill someone, there's some purpose. So here we see, oh, the purpose is gonna take all the loot and this. So he says a novel shot. He says, you know what Shaul's benefit from this war is? And it was too late. He already benefited from it. What was the benefit? Now, obviously, he says it wasn't for the money, but he wanted to show the people that he was a powerful warrior. He wanted to show, I am the king, and not just a king, but I'm really good at it. Remember what the people wanted? They wanted a good warrior to fight for them. That was always something that they wanted. And he wanted to show he was a good warrior. And that was a benefit, and that's the greatest pleasure that a king can get. And therefore, it's who? He brings Agag alive to show the Jews, look, I took him alive. It's a greater act of heroism, of strength, if you can bring back your enemy alive. You know, just to kill him is one thing, but to bring him back alive, you really got to control him and still not let him kill you. Bringing back the enemy alive is harder than bringing him back dead. That shows a tremendous power. And that he brought the sheep to bring as a korban. The intention was that all the people should see how much loot fell in their hands. And that's a sign that his intention was, as the Pasuk says, and that's what it is. And then what, and now you go back to Pasuk Yud-Beis. Shmuel went up to Carmel and he built that tower of the hand to show that he had power. And Forshim said, that's what he wanted to do, to show a memorial over the destruction of Amalek. And that's what Avshalom did for himself as well. The people will say, here stands the memorial to show the great power that Shaul had. So we see that he wanted to show his gvura in this battle. And that's a big sin, because he really is benefiting from the murdering of these people. And these were people who were his relatives. And that's why Hashem gave him the attribute of justice. He says it's something you can't fix up anymore. I would add one more thing. You know, whenever you do, you know, what we said, and just like we said by the, someone who is having illicit affairs with a non-Jewish person, the halacha is, in the days of the Talmud, in the days of the Beis Hamikdash, kanoim pogim bof, a zealot may kill them. That's the halacha, but we don't tell it to people. Right? Also with Pinchas, when Pinchas killed the Zimri and Cosby. He said to Moshe, isn't this halacha? He says, yeah, that's halacha. If you do it, do it. Why didn't anybody else do it? And why do we discourage people from doing it? The answer is, because killing people is still murder. So how does it not become murder? I mean, why are you allowed to kill? Because you're doing it for the sake of the mitzvah. Right? It's a mitzvah. It's halacha. You have to kill them. Yeah. Wait a minute. If it's murder. So how does it not become murder? If you do it 100% l'shem shemayim. When you kill someone 100%, I'm doing it only because the Torah said to kill. Then you're not a murderer. What do you do at 99% for the sake of Hashem, but 1% because you don't really like the guy? Then 1% is cruel, calculated murder. So the same thing over here, and that's why we don't tell people to do it, because it's very hard to find someone's 100% l'shem shemayim. So the same thing over here. Hashem says, listen, you have a command to kill Amalek. You're killing, and you said, how could you kill someone that's not moral? Hashem says, you're right, it's not moral if there's anything but the will of God in the killing of these people. If it's 100% because Hashem said to kill them, then you kill them. And that's not murder, because that's the Ratzon Hashem. But if you have 95% doing the Ratzon Hashem, but 5% to make a big memorial to show that you're a great conqueror, then for that 5% you're a murderer. And that you can't undo, and that you cannot fix. So that really Shaul became, to that degree, he was not L'shem Shemaim, to that degree he was a murderer, and to that degree you cannot fix that Avera. Therefore Hashem did that. And more than that, and you don't even think you did an Avera. And you thought there was value to the Malik, etc., etc. So that already put him in a position that he could not recover from. Okay, Shkaya, we'll continue tomorrow.